It's so long. And they don't even show you the climax of Smaug
I know.
decimating Lake Town.
I know.
Like, you don't even get the payoff. It's like, do you guys know what edging is?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like edging,
I
like the
hate the
cinematic
idea of
version.
everything that edging is.
The Desolation of Smaug is like a 3-hour edge session, just, and you have to wait a whole year before you can finally finish.
God damn it! I get it!
This crap is terrible.
I was titillated.
I know you want to go.
No, I slept with like 3 girls a night. No one ever said anything.
Dude!
Oh god, you guys are disgusting.
Boring.
So boring.
That is an amazing film.
Ooh, I love me some Statham.
That's a little bit of brilliance just came out of your mouth there, Justin.
You know
I like
what?
it.
Do you want to keep going?
Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. David here today. Sadly, Amanda can't be here today, but that's okay. I got my two best buds, Randy and Justin, hanging out with me. What's going on, guys?
Hey, Dave, what's happening?
Not much. What's, how are you guys doing today?
Fabulous.
All is well in the world.
All is well in the world? Randy, why is all is well in the world? Tell me a little bit. Tell me a story.
I gotta tell you, I am super ecstatic. News just broke today that the Star Wars Episode 7 teaser trailer is going to be available this Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday, at 30 different theaters across the nation. You can check geeklegacy.com to find out if it's playing at a theater near you. And it's going to be playing with absolutely every showing of every single movie playing at that theater for the duration of the weekend, starting with the very first showing on Friday morning. So you can go see any movie of your choice, and you're going to get treated to the new Star Wars trailer. It doesn't get much better than that. And I'm just super excited. It's going to be 88 seconds long. We're going to see all sorts of cool stuff. We mentioned last week in the podcast exactly what you can expect to see. In fact, there was even a leaked image online of the last couple seconds of the teaser that featured a Millennium Falcon flying toward the camera, guns ablazing, just like we predicted last week in the show. And it looks legit, and this is going to sound silly, but you can tell because it's got a rectangular satellite dish instead of the circular one that was knocked off in the original trilogy. And that's a defining characteristic of the new Episode 7 version of the Millennium Falcon from the sets that we've seen built. So that's
nerd alert.
Cool. So yeah. I'm just saying, if you've seen that animated GIF flying around of the Falcon flying towards the camera, there's a good chance that could be real. Either that, or somebody's just really handy with the CGI there.
Yeah, it's like
computers.
The exact same shot from like the Episode 2 teaser where it was the Slave 1 instead.
Yeah,
but it's like an identical shot. Because when it was first announced, this trailer, it really struck me as like a almost like a shot-for-shot remake of that Episode 2 teaser tour.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the same thing I said last week, just like the flashes of black and then single images of people with score leading up to something big and totally. So anyway, we all get to see it this weekend, and I'm sure within hours of it being in theaters, it's going to make its way to the internet, whether it's officially released or whether you're going to see people's crappy pirated cell phone video of it. It's going to make its way to the internet. But do yourself a favor, treat yourself, see it on the big screen. And you know, you actually get it's cool. You get to see a whole movie when, of course, what you're really going for is the trailer, but you might as well go see something halfway decent.
Yeah, it's cool. You see
not Interstellar.
Pay to see the trailer, get a free movie.
There you go. That's how it's always been, though, with the Star Wars trailers, at least for me anyway. I always find out what movie it's going to be going in front of, and no matter how terrible that movie is, I will go pay to watch it. The beauty of doing it this way is you can watch any movie that you want to, just go to a specific theater. Now, the problem is, if there's only 30 theaters across the country that's doing this, there's a lot of states out there that are boned completely, because I know we have at least 4, maybe 5 here in California alone. So, for everybody that's not got one of those theaters that's playing a local, I feel bad for you. I'll give you a pass this time. You can watch it online.
Yeah, and sometime in December, they haven't set the exact date, it will go to all theaters.
Yes.
And I'm sure that's when we'll get the official version released online. But yeah, I'm sure there will be bootlegs out there. But, you know, if you're within, you know, a semi-decent drive of one of these theaters, you know, go check it out.
Definitely.
It's always an event. And while you're there, maybe you should watch The Hunger Games because it needs some of your money because it only made $121 million this weekend, which is a pretty decent step down from the previous two installments in The Hunger Games. I know, Randy, you saw it. What were your thoughts on the movie overall?
I enjoyed it. I haven't read the book. I stopped partway through book two, so this is all new material for me. But from what I've heard from everybody that I've talked to that's seen the movie and has read the book, they say, well, part one pretty much encompasses all the boring parts of the book. So when you see part two of the movie, it's going to be all the exciting stuff. And while, yes, it was slow, to me, it didn't seem to drag. I was engaged in the story, and it kind of helps that I had refreshed my memory by watching the first two Hunger Games movies the week before this one came out. So everything was still fresh in my mind, and I was really enjoying the story, again, because I went into it with no expectations from having read the book. So,
gotcha.
I enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think most people were predicting around $150 million in box office. Catching Fire made $158 million its first weekend. The original Hunger Games made $152 million this weekend. They had predicted it would be slightly down because Mockingjay is the least liked of the books. And as Justin had pointed out earlier, no one wants to pay money for half a movie. So I know you didn't see it, Justin. Was that kind of the reason you didn't see it, or just you were too busy?
I feel kind of like Amanda right now. I'm just so blah over the Hunger Games that I'm 100% comfortable seeing these last two films in the comfort of my own living room. I saw the other two in a theater, and they were great for what they were, but I think I'm just, I've lost hood, as it were.
I could see that. Yeah, I mean, franchise fatigue is a big thing. I mean, they're releasing them one a year. And, you know, they're not giving us really a chance to miss it or to almost to really become an event because it doesn't go away.
I might be in a tad bit of a minority here because after I read the first book a couple years ago, I was told that the other two books weren't as good and the ending was terrible. So I actually Wikipedia'd what happened. So I know how the story ends. So that might be another reason why I'm not terribly in a rush to see it.
Yeah, I can't wait till part two comes out and people like Randy who don't know how it ends, I just want to see action to how this franchise ends because Francis Lawrence has been kind of vocal that he doesn't plan on significantly altering the ending, which I think is a pretty big mistake. But, you know, we saw the same thing with Gavin Hood when he adapted Ender's Game. He wasn't going to change, you know, the ending of that book. So, you know, stand your ground. You know, if you adapt something, I guess just keep it the same. One last thing on Hunger Games, just to put it into perspective as the second to last episode in a franchise. Deathly Hallows Part 1, which was the second to last version, made $125 million. And Breaking Dawn Part 1 made $138 million. So those movies still did pretty well in their penultimate episode. But
How did their Part 2s do?
Better.
You don't have that.
I don't. I know Deathly Hallows Part 2 made somewhere in the neighborhood of like $148 million. Breaking Dawn Part 2, I don't know.
It's important to note that $120-some-odd million is still quite successful.
Oh, absolutely. And it made $152 million over worldwide. So, you know, it's almost $300 million over the weekend. So it's definitely a success. It's just, I'm just curious, you know, it had a couple deficits against it, why it performed, you know, so, I mean, it's still a significant drop-off. I mean, it's a $36 million drop-off. I mean, that's pretty big. That's, you know, that's, my math sucks here. That's a 25% dip. I mean, we're not talking like 2%, 5%, we're talking, you know, almost a quarter of its audience went away. And is this a precursor to where is, you know, part two going to do even worse? Or is part two going to get that bump because people are going to be like, well, now I can see the entirety of Mockingjay together, so.
With the holiday weekend coming up, that'll help.
What news has got your goat going? I heard there's something in the HBO world.
Yeah, so True Detective. This is a show that's on HBO, and season one was amazing. I actually finally finished it, and I was pretty sad that it was over, but with season two, you're going to have a whole new cast, which is exciting, especially the way the first season ended. I know you guys haven't really seen it yet, but this is a show. It was 8 episodes, at least the first season was, and it was extremely uncomfortable at times. The writing was clever, and the thing was, it was one of those shows where it wasn't 47 minutes or 51 minutes. Almost every episode was like a 58 to 59 minute runtime. So you felt that extra 10 minutes per episode, you know? And not that it was like long or you felt like it just had to end. It's just one of those things where your comfort zone just never really gelled. It was always like, oh my God, this show is just too intense. And I think the acting had a lot to do with that. And I'm sure that with season two, with the people that are involved, it'll be just as amazing. We have freaking Vince Vaughn coming on board, Rachel McAdams, your buddy Taylor Kitsch, and who's that other nice lady? Oh, Kelly Riley. She's going to be in it as well. And I'm excited for this show.
It's definitely on my list of things to binge watch. So what was your reaction to the finale? It was pretty polarizing. Some people hated it. Some people loved it. Did you find it satisfying?
I did. I was 100% on board with it. Because it's a long ride, man. And it takes place over the course of several years. It starts in 1995, goes to 2002, and then ultimately ends in 2014. So you're dealing with a long, long show. It's over the span of 20 years, basically.
Yeah.
Where this case is haunting these two detectives.
And it's crazy how good McConaughey is when he was not even the first choice. Gandolfini was supposed to play that part before he passed away.
Oh, that's nuts. I can't imagine.
No. And, different story.
Yeah, totally different. Completely different. Because McConaughey, he adds his own little flavor to it. You know, when he takes on a role, it becomes him. And he's just one of those actors that can pull that off. And even though you know it's McConaughey, it's weird because he looks so different than he normally does that it you kind of forget about it every now and again. You're like, man, this guy just looks like a truck stop weirdo.
He's in the middle of his reconnaissance.
Yeah.
I mean, even like a movie like Interstellar, which we won't talk about that much, but, you know, we didn't like it. He was still good in Interstellar.
Yeah. And that's another point I want to bring up, actually. I've been getting a lot of feedback over our Interstellar rants, and we don't want to deter you from seeing the movie. Of course, we want you to see the movie, have your own opinion about it, enjoy it if you must. You know, everyone is entitled to their own little taste in movies, and we hope that you spend your 3 hours in pure awe and love every second of it.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think I'm even going to give it a chance. I might see that because I can't think of anything else that really looks good this weekend to go see with the Star Wars trailer. So I might just go see that, and who knows? Maybe I'll even do it in IMAX.
There you go.
And maybe I'll be a convert. Maybe I'll come back next week singing the praises of how great Interstellar was.
And it was beautifully shot. I loved the cinematography. It was amazing. I just hated the story. Anyway, that's not.
I actually would like it if you saw it, Randy. I wanted to ask you a couple questions about some of the stuff looking like it wasn't in focus, and if that's just because it was shot on film. If now I'm so used to watching digital being so crisp, if that's just what film looks like nowadays.
Oh, it could very well be. And so many of the effects in that were practical. I mean, even like the stars outside of the windows and stuff, it's all practical and no green screen, blue screen, what have you. No shenanigans.
They shot it next to a black hole. It was sucking all the focus out of the lens.
Yeah. Black holes will do that with lenses.
So anyway, True Detective. Check it out.
Awesome. Well, hey Randy, let's put this car in reverse and let's go back to the beginning of our talk and talk a little more Star Wars. The trailer wasn't the only Star Wars news to hit the net. What else is going on?
No, it was not. If you know anything about me and my absolute love for Boba Fett, you know that I adore the bounty hunters in the Star Wars universe. Every single one of them, even the really stupid ones. Kind of like Dengar. Actually, Dengar's kind of cool. He just looks goofy.
Is that a great my name?
So the great thing is, along with Star Wars 7, 8, and 9, you know, we're getting all sorts of other spin-off movies following other tales in the Star Wars universe and maybe seeing other characters' backstories. Well, a fun little rumor popped up to where one of, and in fact probably the first spinoff that isn't a direct 7, 8, or 9 episode that we could be seeing is going to center around a team of bounty hunters that actually, and this takes place before episode 4, they would go off in search of the plans for the original Death Star. And it's been kind of compared to Dirty Dozen meets Ocean's 11 kind of caper kind of tale. And I think that sounds amazing. And I don't know if it's going to be bounty hunters that we're familiar with, maybe some of the familiar faces from the motley crew that Darth Vader hired to try to track down the Millennium Falcon in Empire Strikes Back. But I would love to see at least a few familiar faces in that film. But it makes sense that the Rebels probably wouldn't have the particular skills necessary to do the really dirty work that needed to be done to steal these Death Star plans. So why not fork out a bunch of money and hire professionals? I would absolutely love that if that is gonna come to fruition.
The Millennium Falcon will be involved somehow, supposedly.
Yeah, you know, I heard
that. Like pre-Han Solo Millennium Falcon, so maybe Lando's going to be in it.
That would be great to see a young Lando, or maybe even before Lando. Who knows? Because that ship's been around for a long time. By the time we see it in Episode 4, it is like, it's a hunk of junk, as Luke called it. But damn, you know, you got to figure. That thing's seen some shit. Yeah. It has been in the shit, and I want to see the shit that it's been in.
Right. You know? Well, Gareth Edwards is the director of it, and he's the one who did Godzilla and Monster. And like probably like 6 or 7 months ago, before it was even announced he was going to direct one of the standalone movies, he had changed like his Twitter profile to like a Boba Fett helmet, and then he took it down like 2 days before they announced that he was going to direct one of the standalone movies. But so we'll see. Maybe he'll get the Fett man in the action. One of them's supposed to be about Fett, so we'll see.
Yeah, maybe this could be it. And I think that would be nice. I'd like to see kind of an ensemble, a team cast kind of thing, necessarily, rather than just a Fett solo adventure. I mean, don't get me wrong. I wouldn't mind seeing Fett by himself, but I think getting the band back together and getting a whole bunch of the bounty hunters in on this would be freaking amazing. I love it. I love the fringe characters in the Star Wars universe. Like the mercenaries and the ones that are definitively aligned with the Empire or the Rebels. I think that's where a lot of the real interesting stories lie. So bring it on.
After all, many Bothans died to bring us this information.
Yeah.
Maybe that was the second Death Star. Yeah, that's true.
It's okay. That was the second Death Star, so it's all good. This one, anything can happen.
Oh. Han Solo's girlfriend, Bria, steals the original Death Star plans in the expanded universe, which no longer exists.
Wow.
Hey, maybe she's a bounty hunter.
I'm telling you, I'm on board. If all of a sudden Bria's involved, no.
I mean, that brings on a whole new dimension to the Falcon's involvement in the film. You know, a little backseat action in there. Of course, she's not with Han at the time, you know. Han's not going to ask about the ex-boyfriends.
It'd be so rad if she steals the Falcon from Han Solo to steal the Death Star plans.
Total joyride. Yeah. That could be pretty amazing, too. God damn! See, we should be writing these movies.
We should. Let's call up Kathleen Kennedy and not Frank Marshall. I'm all not Gary Marshall. Frank Marshall. Let's pitch them our ideas. Justin's giving Pixar ideas. We're giving them ideas. You know, Disney really owes us some money, I think, or at least a sponsorship.
Or at least just like give us an annual pass to your theme parks or something. Throw us a bone here. Come on.
Come on, Mickey.
Come on.
Well, slightly spinning off from Star Wars news, Oscar Isaac, who is going to be in Star Wars The Force Unleashed, also just got another high-profile gig. Deadline's reporting that he is going to play Apocalypse in the next X-Men movie, X-Men Apocalypse.
What?
Yeah, it was kind of a shock. You know, he got nominated for an Oscar for Inside Llewyn Davis, where he played Llewyn Davis, which was a pretty fun movie that I enjoyed, and he's a pretty fun character actor. But I don't know. I hate to say like I'm not optimistic, but you know, having just heard Spader play Ultron, and you know, I'm sure it's going to be mostly, you know, mocap, and it's going to be mostly his voice. You know, I could see it coming through. Apocalypse, though, is near and dear to my heart, so I want to make sure he's done right. So I don't know. Do either of you have a strong opinion on Oscar Isaac? I mean, did you guys watch Inside Llewyn Davis, or do you care, Randy?
I don't particularly care one way or the other. I did not see Inside Llewyn Davis, but I say, hey, go for it.
What do you think?
Why not?
Yeah, I'm on the same boat as Randy. Why not? Who cares? He's not going to look like that anyway, so who gives a shit?
Right.
I mean, not to say that he's not a good-looking guy. It's more like how is he? He's never been represented on film before, so it'll be interesting to see, regardless of who plays him, how he looks. That's what I'm concerned about.
I think they should just like take him from the animated series and like just like Photoshop out everything. Be that like cartoon. No, just me.
Yeah. No, that's a good idea. Do it. He looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
He always looks ridiculous. He looks like no other mutant in the world, so.
He is as superior to them as they are to humans.
Right. He's got these tubes, these kind of the blackface thing going, but I don't know, it's weird.
Little jangles action.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of offensive in some ways. I don't know, it's crazy.
Well, Mr. Singer will have to work around the the racist undertones of the character.
Yeah.
Speaking of racial undertones and characters being represented in reboots, Justin, what's going on with Highlander?
Oh man, this crazy franchise is just not going away. So much for there can be only one, huh? We got a million of them. So Highlander is getting a reboot. I think when we first started doing this podcast, that Ryan Reynolds might have even been in talks to be Connor McLeod. Does that sound familiar?
Has it been that long? 100% accurate.
Okay, I know it's been a while, but yeah. So in the movie, you guys might remember that Sean Connery was in the first two Highlander films. He played Christopher Lambert's buddy. His name was Ramirez. He was this Egyptian dude that hung out in Spain and also in Japan. Doesn't matter. Anyway, he became Connor's mentor and showed him the ropes, saying, hey, you're immortal, and all you gotta do is chop off fools' heads, and then when you're the last one standing, you win the prize. Yay! It was kind of a short role, actually. Connery's probably only got about, like, what, maybe 12 minutes of screen time in the first Highlander film, and that's being generous. But Tom Cruise is supposedly being eyed for this role, and that just seems weird. Obviously, he's one of his Cruise's representatives is saying he's far from talks to be in the Highlander, but they're throwing it out there, and that's always fun when the rumor mill starts and you start hearing his names get thrown out there, and it always makes me laugh.
Well, it's got to be funny, especially for him hearing his name brought up in association with that for the first time, and meanwhile nobody's ever actually approached him or anything, so it's like news to him.
In the second one, doesn't he die by a fan?
Yeah, he comes back. Okay, so they kind of break the rules. Highlander 2 ever existed. In fact, it was so bad they did like a Donner cut, and it was called the Renegade Edition, a Renegade version. In the original cut, the immortals were from another planet called Zeist. They were aliens sent to Earth as like a punishment to duke it out, like kind of Thunderdome style. It takes place in the future, and as far as we know, Connor McLeod did in fact win the prize. He was the last immortal standing, and then he goes on to save the world with his gifts of super intelligence, and he prevents the ozone layer from dissipating completely and us getting nuked in from like a solar flare or something. Yeah, that all happens. In the meantime, some aliens teleport to Earth, and then Christopher Lambert calls for his old buddy Ramirez, and out of nowhere, poof, he just ends up back on our plane of existence, and Sean Connery is back. But he's on another continent. He has to hop on a plane and get on the plane and fly to where... I'm not making this up. He lands like on a stage in the middle of a play. I think it's like Hamlet or something. He takes the guy's digs, and then he gets on a plane, and he flies to maybe New York and to save his buddy, Connor.
You don't argue with Sean Connery movie logic.
I know.
You just go with it.
Yeah, they're like, wait, we can get Connery for this movie again? Oh, who cares? They're like, oh, no, he died. They're like, no, fuck it, we can get Connery, so we're doing this.
Yeah, they'll write back the entire script around the fact that they can get him back.
Yeah. Problems off.
We'll wish him back, but not to his location.
We'll just say he's an alien, and it'll all be work out just fine. Oh, so fucking stupid. So anyway, Tom Cruise might get to play this alien from Zeist.
Yeah, I like
not the alien version, maybe.
No, he won't be. He'll be the Spanish peacock.
Well, Randy, why don't you round out our casting trifecta with the little James Bond rumor?
You know, there haven't been any real strong Bond villains since the reboot, I don't think. I mean, there have been some cool ones, but they haven't been iconic like the original Bond movies that we grew up with we didn't grow up in the 60s, but, you know, that were around in the 60s, 70s, 80s. And one of the big, big bad villains in the Bond universe is Blofeld, Ernst Stavro Blofeld. And we haven't seen him in a Bond film since the 80s. 1981's For Your Eyes Only was the last official cinematic on-screen appearance of that particular character. And the reason was that MGM did not have the rights to a bunch of the original Bond library or the ability to recycle those characters until just about a year ago. Now that MGM has retained those rights, it looks like we're going to be able to have access to a bevy of badass Bond villains from the past. So which could be really kind of cool to see re-envisioned versions of them. Personally, I'm hoping that this is just the first in a long line of of good old Bond villains making a new rehashed appearance. But without any further ado, the actor that is going to be rumored as playing, actually not rumored, I guess technically is playing him, is Christoph Waltz, our favorite Nazi from Inglourious Basterds and favorite creepy dude from pretty much any other film that he's ever been in. Because I can't remember seeing him in like a happy, nice, likable character that isn't some kind of weird, fucked up badass.
Like Jacob. But
what's that? Like, yeah. So, super stoked about that. It is official and it isn't. The British news source, the Daily Mail, is reporting that he is indeed playing Blofeld. However, in all the official descriptions for the film, he's playing a character by a completely different name. So it's one of those things where they're kind of trying to hide the involvement of this particular character in the film. But it looks like that's pretty much already been – that cat's been let out of the bag by the Daily Mail. So it looks like it is actually Blofeld. And the pictures that I've seen of him all shaved bald and everything kind of looks like the version of Blofeld that we've seen in the past movies. And if you don't know who I'm talking about, imagine the Dr. Evil character from the Austin Powers movies. He is basically a carbon copy of the original Bond villain Blofeld, with that gray suit, the high collar, carrying a cat around with a big old scar down his face and bald head. That's the guy. Super cool. He was kind of like the arch nemesis of Bond, the head of the villain group Spectre. So we might get to see all of that come back into play, hopefully in a lot less cheesy way than it was in the 60s. Because as much as I love those old Bond movies, there was such an air of cheese to them. But that's okay. You kind of got to give it a pass for being that era. But
Thunderball, isn't he just like a Dr. Claw where you just see like an arm in a chair?
Yeah, you see, basically, like, an arm and a chair and a cat. He's, like, stroking the cat.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally Dr. Claw.
Yeah.
It's funny, because that's probably another character that's derivative of Blofeld. And he also appeared in the 80s Sean Connery reintroduction to the non-official James Bond universe, Never Say Never Again, which was basically a relatively large budget remake of
Thunderball. Right?
Of Thunderball, exactly. Yeah, so we saw a completely different actor play Blofeld in that film, but that one isn't necessarily considered canon in the Bond pantheon, even though it's
was
essentially
Kelly Savalas the exact same story. Blofeld in that one?
I think so, yeah. And it had a young Kim Basinger in it, and I'm trying to remember who else was in that movie, but
Blofeld's cool because he was like a real nemesis to Bond. He wasn't just like a one and done type villain that you know, most Bond films have. He was in like three or four Bond films.
Yeah, and he was always the puppet master. He was always the one pulling strings, the one that Bond can never get close enough to actually catch or do anything with.
Yeah. Well, couple this with the rumor that Batista is going to play Oddjob. You know, you got a pretty powerful villain twofo there.
Yeah, Oddjob coming back. That's another one that they're able to do now because of the whole MGM thing. I'd like to see another iteration of Jaws. That would be cool.
Oh, yeah.
Just like any of the real gimmicky, kitschy kind of Bond villains, bring them back in, even if it's for a small role. As long as you throw a nod to it, I think the Bond fans are going to be insanely appreciative of it. You guys know this is the 24th Bond movie?
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
That has a lot of movies.
Oh, man, I don't remember which Bond film it is. It's the Bond and the girl, or they're going up one of those gondolas on the side of like a, you know, a snow-covered mountain, and Jaws is following them, and like he jumps on top of it, and like
does he like chew through the cable?
Yeah, he chews through the cable. Oh man, it's awful with his metal teeth. But he gets Moonraker. He gets his one up. He gets a girl.
Yeah, and then don't they die together?
He gets ejaculated into space.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but yeah, and the girl's got a big old set of braces, though. They both have total metal mouths. Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
Like
it's cool.
That 1970s headgear style. <Yeah.
laughs> I want to say the actor that played Jaws just died recently, didn't he?
Yeah.
Like in the last couple months?
Wasn't he the dude in Happy Gilmore?
I think so.
Yeah, he was.
Anyway, yeah. So, Blofeld, Bond.
Yeah.
Christoph Waltz. Bring it on.
Yeah.
It's on.
That shit is on indeed.
You know what else is on? We'd reported a couple weeks ago that Michelle McLaren was in talks to direct the Wonder Woman film for Warner Brothers and DC Entertainment. And if the Hollywood Reporter can be trusted, and they typically can. McLaren is actually now poised to both develop and to direct the Wonder Woman film with Zack Snyder producing. So it's kind of an interesting set of news. So not only will DC be the first one to have a real female-fronted superhero movie, they'll be the first ones to have a female director directing a major comic book character movie. They'll beat Captain Marvel by about a year, and Marvel by about 16 movies as far as finding a female director for the role. Of course, Thor: The Dark World was supposed to have a female director, but she backed out due to creative differences. But all signs point to Miss McLaren being a staunch supporter of the project, and she supposedly was contacted way back in August. So she's been keeping her mouth closed. So she might fit in just perfectly with this group of dudes and just keep that trap shut.
Wait, why doesn't Tank Girl count as like a female superhero type chick? Well, I guess she wasn't really a superhero. She was just a
Catwoman doesn't count either.
Catwoman and Daredevil's Electra. Girlfriend, yeah. Electra. But Tank Girl had a female director as well, though.
Who directed Tank Girl?
I don't know. Talali or something like that?
Talali? That wasn't regarded as a commercial success, though, really, was it? Or was it? I don't know.
Well, who knows? We don't know if Wonder Woman will be a commercial
success. Comic book heroine. Right. Huh?
Right.
Well, okay, in today's climate, we'll put it that way. Okay. You are correct, though, Justin.
I'm just tired of people forgetting about these movies.
These amazing works of art like Tank Girl and Elektra and Catwoman.
I just think that, there's a lot of skeptics. I mean, let's just pretend for a second that you're a bigwig at a studio and you say, okay, I'm getting all this shit from fans saying, how come there isn't any female superhero movies? And then they say, well, why isn't there any? And then their right-hand man says, well, there was. There was Tank Girl, there was Elektra, and there was Catwoman. You're like, well, son of a bitch. What are these people crying about then?
Yeah, it'd be great
if that was over a period of 20 years, though. That span of movies you just rattled
out. No, Tank Girl was 95. Catwoman was what?
Catwoman is...
That was like 2004 02? Or something, right?
I think it's like 02.
Catwoman was 2004, and Elektra was sometime in 2003 or 4 or 5.
Okay, so that was over a 10-year period, but I mean, that was 20. It started 20 years ago.
You're onto something, Justin.
Well, no, it's safe to argue that it hasn't been done in the modern era. It hasn't been done in the last 10 years. So it's time to try again.
I think a rep from Fox should come out and say, you know what? We did Tank Girl and Elektra. We're the forerunners here. We produced female-fronted superhero movies.
They should say, we made these movies and you guys didn't want to go fucking see them.
Yeah, this is Amazonian broad. You guys are all lining up.
Don't give us any more shit.
Well, think about whatever superhero movies were being made in that same era. You've got movies like The Phantom and Shadow.
You know what, though? X2, Randy, was in 2003, and that movie was fucking amazing.
Yeah but and O2 had both the Hulk and Daredevil.
And even the Punisher movie wasn't that bad either with Thomas Jane.
I'll agree with you there, but the X-Men franchise was pretty much the birth of the modern superhero movie. In terms of popularity and the quality and just how well it was received by the public. You know, anything made pretty much before that, with the possible exception of the Tim Burton and on to Schumacher Batman movies, they just really didn't have that large public draw.
Yeah, I think they do kind of like ADBC type thing, except it's like before Iron Man, after Iron Man.
Yeah, and that's fair too.
I think that's where the clock starts.
And that's fair. And yep. I can agree with that. I'm just saying the world has seen these movies and rejected them.
Right, the kind of 0-3.
Barbed wire's
a comic.
Yeah, there you go. That's another one. That's in the Tank Girl era, though. That's in the 95.
That's 90s. Just bad.
It's hot.
That's back before...
That was 96.
Before Pamela Anderson had the... Hepatitis C?
It's not coming back.
Damn shame.
So, just throwing that out there. These movies have existed.
Justin,
you know what? If you can, If you can make me an Iron Man movie starring a female equivalent, that's what I want to see. I want to see the female Iron Man. Make it happen.
Yeah. Well, Michelle McLaren, she doesn't have any real feature credits to her name, but she directed a lot of Breaking Bad. She's directed Game of Thrones. So she's been around. She's directed some episodes of The Walking Dead, including a couple finales for all of those shows. And she directed two or three of the episodes in the last season of Breaking Bad. So she's done some real high profile television work. So
yeah, and they're all serious shows too, the dramas, and that's that tone that DC wants.
Yeah,
this serious tone. That's an interesting point, Dave. I'm glad that you brought up her resume, because that is kind of the cornerstones that that DC is kind of building on, is this serious tone and no comedy.
Yeah, so you're not going to get your female Iron Man. No, fuck DC.
What the F? Is that what the guy said? In Superman? What the F?
It's supposed to be in like the 20s, so you like period pieces.
Oh, yeah. Those are the best.
Prequel to Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice.
That'll be interesting. That's
yeah,
interesting,
we'll see.
Man.
I mean, it could be cool.
Could be. I hope it is. I hope it is. I hope that it is so amazing that we forget that Catwoman, Tank Girl, Barbed Wire, and Elektra.
I hope that makes $1 billion, so it makes so much money that all of a sudden every studio is just like green lighting and fast tracking like every female superhero movie.
Yes. Do it.
Yeah. Speaking of terrible ideas, Justin, Hobbit movie's coming out, isn't it?
Shame on you, Dave. I am a fan of the series and its director, Mr. Peter Jackson. I like Frighteners. But yeah,
that was pre Lord of the Rings when he had talent.
Yeah, you know what?
And Michael J. Fox.
Fuck, dude, the Lord of the Rings trilogy. That I put those three films in some pretty high company, and that's with movies like, the original Star Wars trilogy, Back to the Future, Jurassic Park. These are all some of the Terminator 2. Some of my favorite movies, Jaws. The Lord of the Rings trilogy gets lumped in with those. And I love them to death. And say what you will about the Hobbit series, but I'm enjoying the ride. I am not a naysayer like you, sir. And one of our favorite Hobbits, Mr. Billy Boyd there, he's lending his voice talents, and he is singing a wonderful song called The Last Goodbye, and that'll be playing during the ending credits for Battle of the Five Armies. And they made a little music video of it. And in this video, you get a combination of clips from all six movies. And it's kind of bittersweet. And Dave, you are comparing the Lord of the Rings footage to the Hobbit footage, and you throw up in your mouth every time you see Hobbit footage. You're just not a fan. You're more a fan of the practical shots versus the animated series that the Hobbit is.
Well, no, I'm not picking one side or the other. I'm just saying that.
You drew a line in the sand and you said, good Jackson, bad Jackson.
Can you tell me that the Lord of the Rings stuff doesn't look 1,000 times better than the cartoon Hobbit stuff?
It looks amazing. I'm not going to argue that. I just think it's funny that that's the first thing that you pointed out.
Well, I was in
a trance from the beautiful song. You were like, look at that crap.
I like you hold Lord of the Rings is like sacred. Like, they're amazing films. You know, I think Return of the King is pretty close to like a perfect film. You know, it may have one too many like false start endings, but
or close ups.
Fellowship has the and Fellowship is all close ups on Elijah Wood's beautiful, beautiful porcelain skin. But The Hobbit, you know, I've been a pretty big naysayer of The Hobbit, and I know I'll have to eat so much crow after Battle of Five Armies comes out, because I know it'll be amazing, because the first two movies have been so lackluster and terrible that everything cool is going to happen in this third one. And
it's like the barrel race thing.
No, I hated every second of it. And so when I'm watching this video, because they are interspersing Hobbit and Lord of the Rings footage, it really puts them in a side-by-side comparison, and it really accentuates kind of what I think. One of the things I don't like about The Hobbit is that, you know, Peter Jackson was this young, hungry filmmaker who used all these practical effects, these practical sets, people in costumes, all this. And now he's sin-sitting this shit, and it's just all CGI, all green screen. And
did you say Sin City in this shit?
Yeah, I did.
You did.
And I mean, and I love it. And it's not that the movie looks terrible. Its problem is it's got a horrible story because Jackson's stretching it out so much. But just the look of it is, you know, when we first heard it was going to be three movies, we were excited because we were going to get to live in Middle Earth again with its, you know, its built-in texture and its lived-in feel and stuff like that. And we're not getting it in The Hobbit. We're getting these lens flares and we're getting just completely obvious CGI. You know, it's not melding well. And it's a different tone, and it's just the extension of his downfall from Lord of the Rings to King Kong to Lovely Bones to The Hobbit to whatever else he's going to do. It's just, it's been all downhill since Return of the King, and it's disappointing. Randy, list. Got one?
So I know I'm probably the only one that really is still watching The Flash weekly, but I'm still enjoying the hell out of the show, and I found a fun list to commemorate that fact. What I have for you guys this week is 10 lightning-fast facts about The Flash. Did you guys know there's more than one Flash? There have actually been 4 different people to play The Flash.
Yes, we knew that.
And one of them is his own grandson, which somehow comes from like the year 3000 or something like that, which I don't know exactly how the physics of that works, but interesting nonetheless. Did you know he's faster than Superman?
Yes, they had a race.
I would like to watch that race.
There was Batman, too.
Wasn't it Superman versus the Flash? Isn't that what it was called?
Yeah, it would be, at one point Superman was faster, but then they depowered him.
Oh.
Because it was like, why do we need anybody else? We've got Superman.
Yeah.
Well, Flash is so fast that he messes with realities.
And that comes to number 8 on the list. He changed all of reality. Flash is responsible for the reality altering that resulted in the new 52 universe of DC Comics.
Yeah. He's a quick one.
Flash.
Number 7. He was the first Silver Age remake. So he was the first big remake that we got to see happen after DC's Golden Age.
I think he also holds the record for like being dead the longest in the comic book universe.
That is not on this list, but that's a damn interesting fact.
Yeah.
You know, number 6, it's tough to read his mind. He is moving so fast that not even Martian Manhunter can read his mind. Number 5, he has the nicest villains. And this one I found actually to be really interesting.
sorry about that.
His villains actually adhere to a moral code. They don't harm women and children. They abstain from cruelty. They don't battle teammates. And most interestingly, they don't kill cops or superheroes.
Huh.
So it's kind of like, you know, to me, if I know I'm going up against somebody that I know thematically is not going to kill me, doesn't that kind of just make the whole encounter less impactful if there's no real danger, no ticking clock, no chance of death? I think that's terrible, but interesting. I think it's cool. It adds a layer of depth to the villain characters that we don't typically see in comic books.
Yeah,
number 4.
I never thought that's interesting.
Yeah. He has a time-traveling treadmill. So at one point in time, he was going so fast, he realized that he could alter time. And wouldn't it be cool if he had a treadmill that he could do that, just that exact specific act on without having to run around the world to do it? So he built a special time-traveling treadmill. But of course, other super speedy villains can use that to their advantage, like the Reverse Flash can use it to travel backwards in time and do all sorts of crazy shit. So that can lead itself to all sorts of negative outcomes. But I think that's kind of fun, a time-traveling treadmill. Not exactly something you could pack up and stick in your utility belt.
Yeah.
This one's fun. Number 3, he can punch at the speed of light. And in just last week's episode of the TV show, we got to see him do a sonic boom punch. So you see him running down the street like with his arm outstretched, and there's that little like condensation cloud, like when a jet hits the sound barrier, and it just kind of like that cloud travels with his fist. It was kind of silly, but kind of cool looking. I didn't realize he could punch even faster than that. The speed of light. And supposedly, he can punch you 1 billion times in the span of 1 second. So if one world-shattering light-speed punch isn't enough to do it to you, he can do it to you 999 million more times.
Wow.
Yeah.
Some Matrix shit there.
And speaking of Matrix shit, number 2, he's hard to shoot. He's doing that bullet time shit all the time. David, you were just right in there with
I thought
the
X-Men Days of
like
Future
it.
Past.
You're fucking reading my mind. Number one on the list, his entire life has been ruined by his nemesis, and that is Professor Zoom, a.k.a. the Reverse Flash, because of the fact that he can travel through time. He goes back, and instead of trying to kill Barry Allen and taking over the role of the Flash, he more or less becomes the Flash, and all the good things that could have happened to a young Barry Allen, he basically creates all these traumatic events in his life. He kills his dog, frames his dad for killing his mother, does all this terrible stuff, pushes him down the stairs and like breaks his back, all this crazy shit he does to the Flash to prevent him from being the Flash so he himself could become the Flash. And that is how you really, truly act as a super arch villain and F up your nemesis.
But he killed a woman. Nothing don't kill, as Rogue's guys don't kill women and children.
He's not a member of that particular league of villains.
he's the exception.
He doesn't have a car.
He's not one of the nice guy villains. The nice villains were called the Rogues. Professor Zoom was apparently not a rogue.
Oh.
And that's my list this week. Yeah. That's a fun stuff.
Zippy. It was Zip. You guys want to play a quick game, too?
Sure.
Fantastic.
All right. Well, in honor of the Hunger Games debuting and making $121 million, even though it's a little short, I thought I would test your guys' knowledge on young adult series turned into films.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to give you a brief description of a young adult novel that was turned into a popular film franchise. All you have to do is give me the name of the franchise or one of the books or one of the stories. You know.
Yeah. Twilight's the answer to every question.
They will probably show up on this list. So yeah, I'll give you a brief description. First one to shout it out gets the point. If you answer wrong, obviously you don't get to answer again that question.
All right.
Pretty easy. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Do this.
All right. First one. This film series about the Wizarding World's Boy Who
Lived.
Harry Potter. Justin on the board. Grossed $7.7 billion worldwide. All right. Number two. Based on the books by C.S. Lewis, the...
Line with the Wardrobe. Or whatever the fuck they're called.
Chronicles of Narnia.
Yeah.
I will accept Line with the Wardrobe as the first entry. Okay, next. Moving on. Written by a 15-year-old Christopher Paolini, it tells the tale of a boy and his dragon.
Oh, Aragon?
Aragon is correct. What did you say, Randy?
I said Aragon.
Oh, I heard Randy like a millisecond faster. All right, moving on. Okay, in the movie based on James Dashner's book, Thomas wakes up with no memories of his life among a community of boys in a large enclosed space.
Is that the Percy Jackson one?
Maze Runner is correct.
Damn.
All right. This film series tells the tale of Bella Swan falling in love with vampire.
Twilight.
Yeah. All right. Logan Lerman stars as a boy who finds out he is half-human and half-god son of Poseidon. Percy Jackson.
I had that one in the chamber.
That's right. All right, I'm not sure if you guys look at this one. When her mother goes missing, teenage Clary Frey finds herself in...
Mortal Instruments.
There you go.
Wow.
All right. This film series is about a post-apocalyptic world where 12 districts are forced to send Hunger Games. All right. This trilogy depicts a dystopian future in which...
Divergent!
Read my mind. All right. A young boy, extremely intelligent boy, Andrew Wigan, is recruited to attend battle school and groomed to become a commander in a war against aliens.
Andrew's game.
All right. And last but not least, possibly the first and best YA adaption. To paraphrase the Dread Pirate Roberts, there's a shortage of perfect movies in the world. It would be a shame to damage this one.
Oh, Princess Bride?
Princess Bride. All right, good job, Justin. You know your YA novels. You got 8. Randy, you got 3.
Yay.
Nope. So, that's my game. Quick and easy, down and dirty. That'd be a little fun little change with just the two of you, but well played, you two.
You know we like it down and dirty, so you're talking our language.
We were talking about edging, so I know what you guys are up to. You guys got any shout-outs or anything, parting words for the fans?
Real quick announcement. Last week during the list, there was a slight hiccup. It had nothing to do with editing. It was just we always interrupt Randy throughout the course of his list, and his top, what was it, like movies that are better than Interstellar? Horrible movies that you want to watch more than Interstellar?
Yeah.
You had went 10, 9, 8, 9, 6. But rest assured that his second number 9 was really number 7. I just want to throw that out there.
That was my really bizarre lack of seeing and possible dyslexia kicking in. I don't know what that was.
Reverse Randy came through and tried to mess up the podcast.
Yeah. But it's funny because I listened to it and I didn't even hear that.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like 8, then number 9, then number 6. I was like, wait a minute.
But like Spaceballs.
I couldn't even add a 7 if I wanted to because you never said it. So I was like, son of a bitch.
You've got weeks worth of me saying 7.
I know, but I tend to delete shit after I'm done with it.
No, that's fine. I'm teasing. But perhaps I just did it to F with everybody, see who was paying attention. Not a single person sent me an email, so that tells me that nobody listens to my list. They just fast forward to the end.
Oh,
no.
They fast forward to the game.
So, you know, make sure you like the friends of Geek Legacy. You know, NinjaBot's got their Kickstarter going on. You know, you can find banners all over Geek Legacy, usually at the top. You know, click over to their site, check out their stuff.
They hit the goal, too. Now it's all about the stretch goals.
Yeah, now we got to get some stretch goals up in this mother so we can get cooler shit. It's all about fairy tale prints, and there's some really cool watercolor stuff in there you should definitely check out. Of course, there's our buddy Tim Byers over at FullBleed.net and Tony Tolato over at SciFiTalk.com. Always doing amazing stuff, getting great interviews, and giving you some sound financial advice. You got Andy B, speaking of The Flash. He does his Flash podcast, which is actually pretty good, as I say, surprisingly. I caught a couple episodes. Now that I've learned the joy of listening to podcasts at 2x speed, I can listen to twice the podcast.
I sound so much better at 2x speed, I think.
Have you ever listened to podcasts at 2x speed?
I have not.
It's actually not that bad. I would start at 1.5x speed. And if you can handle that, then go to 2x speed. But it's quite the time saver. But that's neither here nor there. Definitely always also check out our other podcasts in the Geek Legacy Network. You know, you got the Pixelated Podcast with Justin and normally Steven. I filled in this week and thought I did pretty damn good. But, you know, let Steven know if you thought so. And then we got the Comic Corner Podcast with Tyler and the Mighty Jer Jeff Mueller. And their show is also amazing, and they do it every other week. And so every other Friday, you get a little dose of comic book goodness. Definitely check out the Electric Fan Cave because they caught our riff on The Good Son a couple weeks ago, so they became my best friend instantly. And of course, you know, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, geeklegacy.com. Questions, comments, concerns, info@geeklegacy.com. We'd love to read some questions on air that didn't have, like, douchebag in the title or something. But yeah, so have a great night, guys. See you next week.